You are listening to Fees Always Wins, a financial podcast.
What's a rip?
A rip, commission. That's why we work here.
You make huge rips.
No, I still don't know how it works.
But you and me, the brokers, right, we're taking home cold hard cash via commission.
Right.
No matter whether our clients make money or lose money, the Duke and Duke get the commissions.
The only thing we don't know is your fee.
My fee is the free market. Your partner.
Hello. Welcome back, and thank you for joining us at Fees Always Win Investment Club, where you know the outcome. They're gonna charge you. This week, another tumultuous week for the markets. We have the scion of the Delta here to talk about his stocks. We have some stories for you, and it's kind of crazy out there, and to see what it does to the market, it really gives you insight. And I don't read a lot of financial news, but I'll scan it every morning just to pick up things and then look at it in the market. And I think a couple of these, you're going to see where we're getting the association from as well. But this is Fees Always Win Investment Club. As I said, we're two investors on a journey to learn more on strategy, indicators, and knowledge to become great investors. You can find us on Facebook, iTunes, and probably every other place you get your podcasts. And leave a rating on our iTunes page. Give us 5 stars. If you think we deserve 4, just don't listen. That's fine. We'll be okay with it. But 5 stars is how you can support the show. Another way to support the show is signing up for a Robinhood account by following one of the 2 links in the show note. Join Robinhood, and you and one of the hosts will get a stock like Apple, Ford, or Sprint for free. I thank everybody who has signed up. I hope your stocks were awesome, and I hope they're performing well. Actually, 2 of the 3 I received, they're performing great, even with the downturn. So, gave me opportunity on something I would never invested in. How goes it, Ello?
Chris, that level of energy that you're bringing right now, it goes well, sir. It goes well into this great weekend that we are headed into. Yes, sir.
Hey, we're almost there. It's the end of the year. It's holiday break. It's Christmas. And you know what Christmas means? That I get to sleep in a little.
Not a lot, but a little.
No, it'll be the one day my son's waking up on time on the weekend. Or on the weekday. Suddenly he's going to be like, oh, you don't have to wake me up at 7. I'm up. It's 4 o'clock. I've been ready.
That's beautiful, Chris. That's beautiful to see how it goes from a kid to a man with his son. Gotta love it.
Growing up, maturing. Well, let's talk about some of these stocks. It's been an interesting week. The Fees Always Win Index is actually up from last week for about 2 points in terms of percentage points. It was 859 last week. It's 880 this week. So there is some growth there. The S&P 500 is down another percentage point. We started at $2,760.16. It's down to $2,599.95. That's 5.8 percentage points loss. The E index, healthier than last week. The C index, healthier than last week. But how's Intel doing for you?
Intel is making a bit of a comeback, better than it was last week. It's about the only one right now. I mean, it's one other stock that's doing okay, but everything else on my end, it's like hemorrhaging stocks right now. What about you, Chris?
So I have only one that's finally profitable from when we started. But it's the one I'm probably the most concerned about with news that came out this week. And that's PayPal. PYPL. I invested in it at 85.81. I'm now at 85.92. So we're above that. Last week we were down 3.54%. So that swing means 4 percentage points almost. That's always exciting news. I'm not going to doubt that. But in the earlier episodes, I said some of my opportunity was looking at something different than the traditional Visa, MasterCard, Discover. Visa, in the last week, decided they're having a war on cash. And now they're going after paycheck processors and to convince organizations to move those processes to credit format. Which means that market by itself is above $10 billion. If they could just get 20% of that market, that's $2 billion more. And they'll be the only credit card company in that sector. So I'm going to stay in PayPal. I'm excited with them. I've had good experiences. I think they're strong, especially with online shopping. But I'm probably going to go put some money in Visa as well to balance out my portfolio on those risks.
That's smart. I mean, Visa is making an aggressive push right now. It makes sense to try and get in on it now before, you know, that train all of a sudden plateaus. Going back to mine, I brought up Intel. So week one, I was at 49.26. Week two, I took a bit of a dip, a negative 4.42% dip to 46.24. This week, I'm at 47.86, a 0.40% increase. So it's not much, but compared to the other stocks I picked, it's better than anything else. The other stock that's better than the rest is O'Reilly. When we first started, we were at 346.78. Week two, it dropped by 4.42%, which is funny because that's the exact same thing Intel did. So it actually had the same gain. Right now, I'm at 348.17, which is 0.40% increase. It's kind of funny seeing those numbers with Intel and O'Reilly being similar in regards to the drop off and now the bit of a resurgence. But oh boy, that other stock, it is hemorrhaging. Chris, what are your other stocks looking like?
Well, my other big one was Dollar Tree, and that's my foray into retail stocks. They did miss their earning reports last week, but it was by a very small percentage. Their P&E is fairly high at 11, so there is return on investment. Their ROIC was strong, so I still believe in the fundamentals. It's the holiday. People need gift wrapping paper. They need extra knickknacks to fill stockings, and what better place to buy that than where it costs a dollar. I think it's still a buy. The market, it's more or less reflecting what the market did 2 weeks ago, and it's come back since then. So it's showing that there is a difference. And a lot of this seems that this could be anecdotal, and that's probably one of my favorite words as I use it all the time. But often when I'm seeing results for companies, the stocks go down when the companies do well, which make me think of one or two things. One, analysts don't believe the company is actually doing as well as their stocks are performing, and that could be the case. The market has more liquidity due to taxes and stock buybacks as a result. Or two, institutional investors are taking the opportunity after it's announced, and there's an algorithm that kicks in and says sell at this point and we'll get back in 5 points less. Because nothing else would make sense for it to drop like that and then come right back the following week after the earnings did not meet expectations. So I still think Dollar Tree, I have confidence. We're only down 1.05 percentage points. This is going to be another workhorse for me. It's my bigger ones that I have some more concern over.
Okay, that makes sense. I mean, going into the Christmas season, it made so much sense, though, to pick Dollar Tree, because you would think that there would be a surplus of that need, especially for people who aren't out here able to afford the richest of gifts, like to be able to get something, especially for a cheaper price and buy it in bulk. It just makes sense. On my end, Comcast. So initially, Comcast was at $38.89. Week two, it's still at $37.41, which was -3.81%. You know, it's not ideal, but in the long run, you assume that things are going to start to turn around for the better, just based on the improved technology and the fact that Comcast is allowing you to access different streaming services and different things at one time. So they're expanding their platform. This week, it took another hit. So from 37.41, we're at 36.34. But overall, it's a -6.56% drop. Now, I'd like to see where the S&P 500 is. The S&P 500 is at a -5.80%. We are at 6.56%. That is a bit alarming. My goal with Comcast, though, is I have this plan and I have this idea that Comcast is, they won't really start to see true gains until 2020, just based on, I keep bringing up the merger with Sky, but I also believe that those technological advances are really going to start booming in 2020. So we're just leading up to that point. Unlike Dollar Tree, I won't say Comcast is my cash cow. It's the company that, in my mind, has more benefits than it does downfalls. But like with everything that we do, I have a set number in my mind, and if it starts to drop to get to that number, then at that point I'll start looking in different directions. But I really feel like Comcast is going to bounce back. 2019 is going to be a bounce back, but 2020 is going to be when we really start to see real gains and things start to move in a positive direction.
It's definitely the long-term play on there, and they have the market, they own the lines, and the way that net neutrality is written, they're only going to be able to capitalize more out of it. I see AT&T's making more of a drive. And did you see today that pretty much the Justice Department is going to confirm the T-Mobile Sprint deal as long as they get rid of Huawei, that Chinese company, the one where the director was indicted in Canada and it's probably going to be extradited to the U.S. that China's angry about? Are you familiar with that story?
No, I am not, but I will most definitely read up on that tonight.
Yeah, and so Huawei is the Apple of China, and they kind of got to that point by building the backbone and infrastructure and component parts for the Apples, the Samsungs, the Google Pixels. The goal of China, they have a plan by 2025. They want to be deleveraged from U.S. technological products. Some of it is for spying purposes. Some of it is just the health of their own country. But that's why some of this tariff war is truly over intellectual property, because their contention is Huawei had access to all this information as building the components, and they've been utilizing it. So one of the parts that they've done, Huawei is heavily using this network because they have that understanding on how to build it. But as part of this merger, T-Mobile has to kind of get rid of that. Reading an article this week about the T-Mobile CEO, they figured they learned a lot from the Metro PCS merger and that they're going to start deactivating Sprint network as they slowly expand the T-Mobile. So all new customers who sign up with Sprint after the merger will actually be on T-Mobile. All existing Sprint customers will stay on the Sprint network until they're ready to deactivate it and move them to T-Mobile. So if you have Sprint, this means you're not getting 5G. You're going to be the last to get 5G. And when I say if you got Sprint, I mean me. But it just goes to show that landscape is ever changing. Comcast, what they're doing with other aspects of it, including security and phone and TV and internet, they're positioned pretty strong.
So this is a personal story because we both have Sprint. So are you going to go ahead and switch over to T-Mobile, or are you going to wrap this one out?
We were actually just talking about this, my wife and I. I do just want a new phone. So my first focus is just buying a new phone. And I might do that at Sprint, like trade in my current one so I can get the credit, but I want to pay it off right there. Because there's no way I'm signing a contract or leasing it with them. Because reading the small print, the lease is their new contract. And instead of 2 years, they want 36 months out of you. And their network's horrible, and they're scheduled only to get worse. So now it's kind of come down to T-Mobile and Verizon. And right now, T-Mobile has good deals. I would like AT&T, but that's only affordable once I add their internet and get rid of Comcast.
Yeah, after this conversation, it's possible I may treat myself to a Christmas gift of getting rid of Sprint and going over to T-Mobile, especially if by staying with Sprint, I'm actually going to have worse service because of it. Wow.
And I would encourage anybody who works for a large organization, you should contact them. My organization, we're large, so we have a lot of relationships and connectivity. And as a result, all of the big phone companies have a special pricing for employees at my company. Most likely, if you're working for a Fortune 3000, they probably have a partnership with at least one carrier, and you could probably get better pricing.
That's a fair point that I would imagine a lot of people don't even think about, but there are discounts out there for you, especially working in corporate America, just based on the different links that people have. So, yeah, that's a good point. Because I know T-Mobile, we get a nice percentage off with them and AT&T. So.
Yeah, then that helps make the decision for you. But yeah, I'm definitely going to treat myself to a new phone. I'm just not sure if it's going to be a new plan because I'm just tired. I don't want to switch over a bill this time of year. But back to the list, Salesforce CRM, they're up from last week, but they're still down 4.05% overall. That's lower than the S&P 500's losses, but higher than the Fees Always Win Index. One of the things that stands out with me, their growth, their potential. We went over the numbers last week of the outstanding contracts and potential contracts that exist already, and they're in the billions. So they're going to be okay on that aspect. One thing that's interesting is you go online, a lot of these financial websites, I use Fintel, I use some other broker sites. Salesforce leadership has had a lot of insider trading. And this isn't in the sense of a crime insider trading. If you're an insider and you own significant shares, you have to publish when you do unload shares. The CEO has unloaded a significant amount this week and over the past 3 months since they went public because he wants to realize his gains. And the chief people officer, yes, I did not make that up. The chief people officer, she has also been unloading a lot of shares. So one thing it looks like is these aren't even the institutional investors taking their money out. It's the leadership taking their money out and just deleveraging. They're not going to zero. They're still going to have significant ownership. Currently, the CEO has $3 billion in Salesforce. So even if he takes out $1 billion, there's still $2 billion there, and he owns a couple of board seats as a result. Better than the S&P 500. Doesn't say much. This is my worst performing stock.
Listen, if your worst performing stock puts you at negative 4%, Let me tell you something, sir. Let me give you an idea of my worst performing stock. Ollie's Bargain Outlet. OLLI. Week one, they were at $88.07. Week two, they had a drop of $69.11. That was a drop of 22.09%. A drop of 22.09% is quite alarming. It's interesting considering this is a company that's growing and from all accounts is financially stable. I thought, and I said it last week, things are going to turn around. We're headed into Christmas. It just makes sense. And then this week came. So this week, they dropped a negative 25.14%. So if you look at this week and last week, we are looking at almost a 50% drop. Now, Chris, you and I have talked about this, and we've said that it's an outlier because prior to us making our picks, this is a company that was growing, is moving into different locations, that they're planning to move in different states. I actually visited a store that's near the DFW area, and I was impressed by it. So I can't really explain the drop-off like this. Because it's one thing to have 4% here, 6% there, negative, but to go from negative 22% to negative 25%, that's a bit alarming, especially in December when you're going into the Christmas holiday. So I am going to monitor this. Not only am I going to monitor it, I'm going to do more research to get a better understanding of why a company that is growing and that is profitable and from all accounts seems like it's going to be the next big company that nobody knows right now. I think I called this one my Patrick Mahomes, but now it's starting to look more like the quarterback in Buffalo for the Buffalo Bills right now. But I don't know. I'm at a loss of words with this one. Normally I can have some type of idea, some type of explanation for why things are happening the way they are. It seems like this company is growing. It seems like it's going to be a company that thrives and becomes a big contender in multiple states in the next couple of years. So I don't know. I really don't know what's going on with this particular stock, but I guarantee you within this next week, I have a much better understanding of what's going on and what's going to happen moving forward.
Part of investing is having that long-term and short-term outlook. If you need to cut and run, it's probably not the right investment for you to be speculating on potential growth. You need to go with something more dividend-worthy. Sometimes you take a risk and you have to ride the wave with the company. You ride to their successes. Like everybody reads that article and it's like, if you just invested $1,000 in Apple in 1972, you would be a multi-millionaire now. True. You also would have been through like three bankruptcies, the CEO leaving, everything before you get to the iPod. And most likely, if you didn't have the stomach for the first thing that made you leave, you didn't have the stomach for the seven others. And most people don't. And that's all right. But I like Ollie's once I've learned more about them. And we'll continue looking forward to it.
Yeah, when we first started, I think my biggest selling point was the fact that it's growing. And even the fact of finding out that it was a store out here, I even talked about visiting the store just to get an idea of what it is and, you know, getting a feel for it. So I'm not necessarily freaking out, but at the same time, if every week it's a negative 20%, that is a cause for an alarm. But you bring up a good point, something that we first started talking about when we started the podcast, long-term versus short-term. And like a lot of people, like you said before, that's the thing that no one talks about. It's not like you just invest in the company. And then from that point forward, they just automatically make you money, and that's it. There are certain ebbs and flows that come with this. That's why you watch the trend lines. So we'll see where things go moving forward. I see things turning around, but we'll keep an eye on it and see where it goes.
My last pick is Nike. NKE is the stock symbol. This week, they are down another percentage point, down to 3.19. Their earnings are next week when they announce them. Many people expect them to beat their earnings. But one of the things, that market's a lot more difficult. If any company's done well in diversifying, it's Nike. That they're not just shoes anymore. There's socks, there's lifestyle wear, there's sweaters, there's everything else. Because I went to the store last week, saw some Pumas that just weren't the indoor soccer Pumas. Pumas are on the come up. And with the people they have working on each of these brands, they're going to continue taking market share. Will any of them beat Nike in the next 10 years? No. But they just chiseling off a percentage a year, and that's going to change the next generation who grows up with the Jordan not being the hottest shoe. And I feel like it's already been that way for 5-10 years now. Kids don't really care about Jordans. That's why they keep releasing the 11 Concords, because that's us who care. When I say us, the above 30-year-olds.
That's a fair point. I mean, we were talking about Puma when they brought in Jay-Z and started signing these new athletes to be the face of their company. And it's looking like long-term it's going to pay off. Like, for people right now, it's like, oh, man, Puma, they're not going to do anything, because you're looking only here and now. But in the next 2 to 3 to 4 to 5 years, when they continue to sign these players and they start hitting on franchise-type talents, we're going to see Puma really start to rise. I had a question for you. You don't have to answer it now. We can talk about it later. But Kawhi Leonard signing to New Balance, does that move the needle anywhere, or is it just a signing for him and that's just kind of what it is?
All jokes aside, it kind of sounds perfect. It's a quiet brand and the quietest NBA star we have ever seen.
Yeah, and he's not riding the wave of everyone else with Puma. He's kind of doing his own thing. Because I don't remember any other big athletes, and I could be wrong, that were signed with New Balance. Like,
I don't think big athletes, but
a basketball shoe.
The first I heard of New Balance with an athlete is this summer. They have this new intern who's a top 5 prospect, is skipping college, is skipping the G League, and is interning at New Balance this year. Different departments, but really just training to get ready for the draft. They're paying him $1 million with the hopes that that story pays for enough of the advertisement and them actually making the league and getting drafted in the first round will help. Now that Kawhi is the face of it, they have 2 stories going into next year's draft, and that really seems like when the shoe buying season starts, because that's when the commercials or the marketing seemingly starts in the industry.
And that's the proverbial wink, wink. Like, we're going to bring this kid in. He's going to be an intern, and then he's going to get drafted. And you know what? Hopefully we can get him to a shoe deal with New Balance. Hopefully. Wink, wink. It's the way business is done nowadays. I mean, that's just the way things go. It's not going to be a shoe war, because to say a war means one side has to win, unless it's a drug war. But I think we're going to see a lot more competitive and fashion-forward shoes, kind of like with the auto industry, how like you started to see Kia and different companies in the past that were not so dependable. All of a sudden, everybody was starting to step the game up. You started getting better quality of vehicles. I think we're going to see better quality of shoes coming out, because it's going to be like an arms race to sign these athletes and these stars to these different places.
Yeah, it's either that or more control for these athletes. Because to go to these different brands, I feel like part of this deal is, hey, you actually get to help design your other shoe. We're not just going to have a design team provide you with the shoe and you tweak it from there. And I think that's a benefit, that everybody wants to have their stamp on something that they accomplish.
And hopefully they start to get stock options and additional things on top of just the shoe deal itself, like Steph Curry did.
Right, Steph Curry, or who was the Seattle? Or, don't do what Spencer Haywood did.
Yeah, don't. But he listened to his agent. He trusted his agent more than he trusted a company that at that time wasn't big. But my God, at least do half and half. Like, give me $50,000 and then put half of that stock in my name. At least work something out.
Do we have any articles tonight we want to go over?
Yeah, I have a few. This one, one of them is something we talked about before. I just wanted to bring it up just based on the absurdity of it. I know you have one, too. And the one you have is more important on a grand scale of things. Mine is just, it's sad. It's just strange. So Goodyear shuts down in Venezuela and gives tires a severance. For those who may not have heard me, I said tires as severance. Goodyear is halting its Venezuela operations and laying off its local workforce. So the last foreign corporation to close shop in the crisis-torn country is Goodyear. Employees arrived at the company's lawn plant in the industrial city of Valencia to find it closed with a letter posted on the door. Goodyear Valencia has been forced to cease operations. So the people, they didn't know that it was shutting down. They went there hoping, you know, for another day of work and just preparing to do what they always do. And not only did they come to a place where it was shut down, the severance package was tires. They offered their employees tires, not money. Not stock, not anything additionally that can add value to them other than tires. This is not a joke. This is not a funny or die moment. This is not a trolling. This really happened. These people went to work. The plant shut down. And as a severance package, they offered them tires.
This story resists in the realm of absurdity.
So, this is the crazy thing. This is the severance package, and there's more than 1,200 employees. They each get 10 tires. So, those 10 tires are considered to be valuable to a certain extent. And the plant produced some 1,000 tires a day. But at the end of the day, you've been with this company for X amount of years or however long they've been open. You're not aware that they're going to shut down. You go there to work and you are offered tires as a severance. You get 10 tires. Each person gets 10 tires. I don't know, man. Like, It doesn't seem real, and maybe from a cultural standpoint, I'm looking at it differently, but I can't imagine walking into my job, and then the job is shut down. I don't have a job anymore. My severance is 10 tires. So I come home to my wife and say, hey, baby, I lost my job, but I got 10 tires.
So let's play guess what the CEO makes. This particular CEO named Richard J. Kramer, what was his total compensation package in 2017?
Is it over a billion? It wouldn't be over a billion.
No. It's not over a billion.
$26 million.
Okay. No, it's actually lower. So it is at $8 million. In 2015, though, he was compensated $15 million. Which is a worker pay ratio of 3.23 to 1. And I think this kind of story circles back around where the difficulty of being a truly ethical investor, because they're almost counter. He's just trying to cut a workforce without any legacy costs that ultimately makes the investors more money.
But so I'm curious. $8 million. What's that in Venezuelan tires? You know, like, can we get some type of valuation for that? Like, how many tires do you have to have in Venezuela to equal that $8 million that he has?
A pound of raw carrots in 2015 in Venezuela costs 19.5 American dollars
for a carrot.
A bundle of carrots, not a carrot, but a very limited amount of carrots.
Almost $20.
Yes. A Big Good Mac grief. Would cost about $14.60.
Good grief.
So, Venezuela's not doing well. So this is probably why they were able to exploit the workforce. In August 9th, 2016... a dozen eggs cost $150. The U.S. average is $1.49 for a dozen. It's almost 100 times the price. So maybe this is some compensation. It just feels wrong. And I'm not sure as an ethical investor, I almost feel like I need to set myself up a formal list of ethics to help guide me. Because as of now, I'm just investing reactionary, that if I'm offended by something or I don't like the practices, I could vote with my money. But I should probably really be more diligent before I do invest my money.
It's just disappointing. It's really disappointing. Maybe 10 tires in Venezuela, they can make a good living off of that, but still, it still doesn't feel right.
Yeah, at the price of food, it sounds like that's a week of food, pretty much.
My goodness.
You have a family.
My goodness. What about you, man? Do you have any stories, sir?
Well, this one kind of also goes for corporate responsibility and expectations as an investor. This is a long-term company, a historic company that everyone is familiar with.
I was a recall coordinator. My job was to apply the formula.
3 points.
A new car built by my company leaves somewhere traveling at 60 miles per hour. The rear differential locks up. The car crashes and burns with everyone trapped inside. Now, should we initiate a recall? Take the number of vehicles in the field, A, multiply it by the probable rate of failure, B, then multiply the result by the average out-of-court settlement, C. A times B times C
equals X. If X is less than the cost of a recall, we don't do one.
The Reuters article is one-sided, false, and inflammatory. Simply put, the Reuters story is an absurd conspiracy theory, in that it apparently has spanned over 40 years, orchestrated among generations of global regulators. The world's foremost scientists and universities, leading independent labs, and J&J employees themselves. Johnson & Johnson baby powder is safe and asbestos-free. Studies of more than 100,000 men and women show that talc does not cause cancer or asbestos-relating diseases. Thousands of independent tests by regulators and the world leaders prove our baby powder has never contained asbestos. This story is in relation to the Reuters publication that Johnson & Johnson not only lost a case in regards to victims who received cancer and the jury believed it was the result of the use of Johnson & Johnson baby powder on a regular basis, to where now Reuters shared information that indicates from 1971 to the early aughts, the 2000s, Johnson & Johnson executives, mine managers, doctors, and lawyers were aware the company's raw talc and finished powder sometimes tested positive for small amounts of asbestos. The stock went down more than 9% today as a result of this news, losing billions in their market cap. What are your thoughts? Because my thoughts are, I kind of want to go throw away my son's shampoo from Johnson & Johnson, because who knows what's in that if they weren't willing to tell us this.
It the thing that the most troubling thing to me is it. I relate this to cigarettes and how people knew how dangerous cigarettes were for the longest, but they wouldn't say anything. This is completely different, because with cigarettes, you can say, well, hey, you're smoking at your own risk. A baby, children, because when you think of baby powder, baby is in the name. So these are kids that you're negatively affecting. And I can't say this because it's not a factual statement. It's more opinion based. So I just want to put that out there. It feels as if Johnson & Johnson said, well, hey, as long as we can keep selling this product and nobody says anything, we're going to continue to do that. So it took them being outed for this to take place. But how many people are going to be affected by that? Like, Chris, I know you've used baby powder at some point in time in your life. I have too.
Everyone has, I feel.
It just, for those children that are going to be affected negatively, if this would have never came out, they wouldn't have known, hey, this is caused by baby powder. I mean, it's the most vile thing, because somebody somewhere knew about this, and they continued to let things happen because there was a profit that was being made. And that goes back to the morals that you spoke of before. This is something I draw my line in the sand on. It's just, it's one thing to present a product where people have a choice to negatively impact their lives. You smoke, that's your choice, but know the risk. But you don't think about those type of risks when it comes to baby powder. You think of baby powder as being safe, something that helps your kid or, you know, for whatever purposes you have for it. So this is just, it's disheartening. It almost makes you lose faith in humanity, because there were people who knew this was the case. And when they found out about it, I don't necessarily knew if they really ran to stop it.
It almost brings up that thought from Fight Club, the movie, where Edward Norton is calculating. He's like, I work for a major car company. And if the potential lawsuits don't cost more than the recall, then we don't recall that vehicle despite knowing whatever damage is in it. That's what this feels like. Johnson & Johnson just looks like they just walked themselves in a class action lawsuit. So their stock might be down for a while until that's resolved. And I haven't heard of a class action being resolved soon. Interesting note, the lawyer on the Johnson & Johnson is a Texas Tech graduate. Or not on the Johnson & Johnson team, but the plaintiff's team who is suing Johnson & Johnson. He is a Texas Tech graduate, also the namesake of the Texas Tech Law School building now, and is a lawyer in Houston in an undescript office probably 15 minutes from here. It just looks like it got bigger.
Whoever that guy is, good job, sir, for taking it. Because it's one thing to be outed, but whenever you're dealing with a big business or a big corporation, you know they're going to fight against this. They're not going to go away easily. They're not going to go softly into that night. So they're going to fight this. And to be that person that's willing to stand up to the big baddie, the company that's been out before you and I were alive, like, there are people who feel like Johnson & Johnson was a trusted name. No. No, they're not. No. And we're seeing that now. We're seeing that with a bunch of companies between Goodyear, between Johnson & Johnson. It's a lot of companies that, like you said before, Chris, from a morality standpoint, I mean, where do you draw your line in sand, basically?
Yeah, this line is less opaque. This one's pretty much right in front of me in neon paint. It's easy to see where the line is here. And it's not on the side of the corporation that's basically saying fake news.
All right. Well, jeopardizing the lives of children.
So what's your last story?
Chris, that one, man. Goodness. Talk about getting in the fields. That one got me in the fields. All right, so after looking at the our stocks, I wanted to pull up something because I don't know about you, but with my friends and sometimes my family, I talk with them about investing and the benefits of it. And I get so many people that are against it, but their reasoning for being against it, it isn't always a valid point. So I found an article, and it talks about the 9 investing myths that people still believe. So there's certain myths when it comes to investing that people are kind of caught up in, and they believe those myths more than any fact that you can provide them. So I kind of just want to go over a couple of those, just hopefully for somebody who's listening out there that can get some additional information that may help them moving forward. Because a lot of people are afraid to invest. They're afraid to even go into it because they have these preconceived notions. A lot of people feel that stocks are riskier than bonds. It's understandable that investors would believe this myth because the stock market is so volatile on a month-to-month or year-to-year basis. However, on a longer-term horizon, the U.S. stock market has been remarkably consistent. Since 1926, the rolling 30-year average annual return of the Standard & Poor's 500 Index has stayed between 8 and 15% nearly the entire time. While the investment-grade bonds can be extremely low risk, so can a diversified portfolio of high-quality blue-chip stocks or a low-cost S&P 500 index fund, such as the Vanguard 500 index fund. Another myth, your money is safe with a professional. I hope people don't always feel this way, but okay. Just because a financial advisor has knowledge about the stock market doesn't mean he or she is good at investing. In the past decade, 87.5% of active funds run by money managers have underperformed the market, according to S&P Global. Surprisingly, financial advisors are not even legally required to act in the best interest of their clients. I'll say that again. Financial advisors are not even legally required to act in the best interest of their clients until a proposed Department of Labor fiduciary rule goes into effect. Financial advisors are free to recommend investments based on maximizing fees and commissions rather than potential client returns. I almost want to repeat that. Fees always win. I feel like that is such an appropriate term for what I just said. There's always the risk of outright frauds and Ponzi schemes also. So we have to say that. Buying stocks is like casino gambling. People believe that stocks are riskier than they really are, because they're thinking in the short term. And this is something, Chris, you talked about with Ollie, short term versus long term. If investors treat the stock market like a casino by making short term, highly concentrated bets on the high risk stocks, they're likely to experience the same type of terrible returns that the typical casino gambler could expect. However, by selecting a diversified fund or a basket of blue chip stocks, historical data suggests investors can expect annual returns of greater than 8% in the long term. There's no casino in the world that can provide that kind of long-term payoff. Okay.
another myth. Investing requires a lot of money. It's easy to look at $5,000 in savings and think that buying stocks is not worth the effort. After all, an 8% return on $5,000 is only $400, which won't get very far in paying for retirement. While it's true that investors won't get rich overnight by investing $5,000 in a diversified portfolio of stocks, the power of the stock market rests in compounding returns. If a person starts investing $5,000 per year in the stock market and gets an 8% annual return, that portfolio will be worth more than $500,000 within 30 years. Once again, going into the long term. Past performance guarantees future returns. An investment's past performance on a long enough time frame can be an important indicator of what to expect in the future. But assuming that a stock, bond, or commodity will continue its past trajectory in the years ahead can be a risky way of thinking. Chris, you talked about this with Apple. People look at Apple now and assume that it's always been a cash cow, like you said, between bankruptcies and a bunch of different ups and downs. It's been a process. So rather than trying to guess where a stock is headed in the short term by looking at the past, investors should choose quality, long-term investments and remain patient through the short-term market noise. I just have a few more, and then I'll be done. Another myth is that gold is the best investment. Unfortunately, while gold provides protection against inflation, there's little evidence to suggest it is a better long-term investment than stocks. From 1996 to 2015, gold generated an average annual return of 5.2%, well below the average annual historical return of the S&P 500. From 1970 to 2015, gold averaged a 7.9% annual return, roughly in line with the low end of the stock market's historical range. Well, while paper money may have no intrinsic value, gold doesn't either. Like any other asset, gold is only worth what investors are willing to pay for it. Okay. I have one more, and then I'll be done. Popular companies always make good stocks. If anybody knows, when I first started, I picked GE because they were a popular company. They were a name brand. And I just knew that they were going to continue to be successful. This is when we very first started. And just because a company has a recognizable brand or a popular product doesn't mean the company's stock will be a good investment. The market reacts to a number of different valuation metrics other than brand popularity. Investors value stocks based on share structure, earnings, and revenue growth, company debt levels, subscriber counts, same-store sales, and countless other industry-specific numbers. For example, Facebook and Twitter are two of the most popular and successful social media brands in history. However, in the past 3 years, Facebook shares are up 138%, while Twitter stock is down 45%. The reason I want to go over this article, Chris, is because it basically touches on a lot of things that we've already been going over, but there's so many different myths and so many different fallacies out there when it comes to investing. And for me, it's not necessarily with you because you and I discuss this all the time, but it's when I try and talk to other people about investing, not forcing them into it, but just giving them the benefits of it. Like one of the things I read before, they think it's like going to a casino almost, where you're almost guaranteed to lose, where the house always wins. And then they look at it like one of the things I touched on, let's say you invest $5,000, you make $400. Well, if you have a long-term strategy, you can make that money stretch. But most people, when you talk to them like that, they assume that you're either trying to make a fool out of them or they automatically assume they're going to lose their money. So I just figured that was a good article to go over to give people not only the ins and outs of investing, but just to let them know there's a benefit to it, but you kind of have to have a plan. You can't just go off of a company's namesake and think just because, oh, hey, GE or Twitter or whatever. So it has to be successful. You got to do your research and you have to be patient, like we discussed. So that was my article.
And I really like that article. It's really thought-provoking and makes you think of a different perspectives. That even if you don't want to invest, sometimes the easiest, like a market right now, can be placing your money in a money market account that's guaranteeing you a percentage versus keeping it in a large bank. Like a bank will give you one amount and that will likely be under 0.5%. A credit union will give you another amount, which will probably be double of what the bank's willing to pay you. But there's certain money market accounts, especially this week, a broker announced access for banking in which they're guaranteeing 3% a year. So over 2 years, compounding 3% is still good money. But in most healthy years of the market, you're still going to want it there. So now's a good place to do it. And I wonder how much was that part of their plan to roll it out around Christmas time for that new opportunity.
That actually, when I first read that, it seemed like it wasn't real. I mean, because it's such a great opportunity. And somebody even asked me, like, hey, is that a good idea? Yes, it's a good idea. Like, compound interest is the name of the game. Compound interest is making your money work for you. And if there's any way that you can go about making that happen, it's a smart choice. Because you're basically making money off of interest and collecting it into your money. So it's something to look into. Not saying that you have to do it. Not saying that you have to invest. But it never hurts to be financially literate and have a plan for where you want to go. Because, Chris, I think you can attest to this too. The older you get, time just flies. So 1 minute you're 18. Then you're 25, then you're 30, then you're 45. At least set yourself up to have something, some type of money, some type of nest egg for when you get older. So that's the goal, is have the fees win in your favor versus going against you, basically.
Yeah, and really once you get to retirement, you're just trying to guarantee yourself a lifestyle. And planning ahead assists with you identifying what do I need to save or make to continue living this lifestyle. So when you're thinking of savings and investing, that's the goal. Where I could personally say we would never just vouch for, and you're not a great investor if you're not hitting home runs, because if you are hitting home runs every pitch, you would be running J.P. Morgan or one of these big investment houses. You would be Bobby Axelrod.
You know, I always like a Bobby Axelrod reference, right? So, yes.
We still need to do a whole show about that, so I got to get you the third season.
I'm actually working on that now. We're getting connected with that. We're getting connected with Showtime and Cinemax because I'm trying to watch The Tales from the Tour Bus with Mike Judge and Showtime. So I want to watch.
For Desus and Mero?
Yeah, I'm needing my fix of that as well. It's time. It's been too long.
Yeah, I'll probably sign up for it when they come back. What, they come back in February?
I believe so.
That's when I'll sign up for it, and that should be about the time of the next season of Bobby versus the State.
And if I can get you on that, Ray Donovan, too.
No, I did watch Ray Donovan. I just didn't like this last season.
Nah, I haven't even seen the last season. I fell behind. So, yes, sir.
Yeah. Well, thank you for joining us. Fees always win. We appreciate your ear. Leave us a message. We'd appreciate what you know. Share it with us. Even come on the show, and we'll be happy to talk. I hope all is well out there. It is close to Christmas, so hold your family tight. Drink something a little warm, and give everybody an extra hug. Because there's never too much love to go around this time of year. It's just not about the gifts. It's about the gift you could provide, and that's your time, your attention, your love. Do it for your financial health. Do it for your well-being, and do it for your relationship health. Scion of the Delta, I'm out of here. I'm going to let Tim Lippy from Brown Star Insurance serenade us out.
Oh, holy night. Costly premiums have them pining. Term life robs them of all they are worth. But there is hope. Policy holders now have choices. Behold an agency that won't leave you torn. Home Auto Life Insurance. Brown Star, Brown Star, Brown Star Insurance of Brown Valley, Wisconsin. We are divine.